Hey! A little bit back after our vacation. Hey, Becky?
Yeah, it's nice to be back.
Yeah. Little did I know, coming back from vacation, I would be talking about shoes.
Shoes.
Shoes. This is Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. I'm Sam Mulvey. This is my show. Our phone number is 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. That's our voicemail number. It is toll-free nationwide. Joining me today, as usual, is the lovely Becky.
Hi, Sam.
Hi. And Roger and Greek from Norway, and I'm terrified that I'm going to mispronounce everything we talk about, but maybe less about the shoes. A Berlin-based company whose shoes are imprinted with the Ich Bin Atheist is seeking to come to America. Since debuting in 2012, Atheist Shoes had sold their handmade sneakers worldwide, with most purchases going to the U.S. Wearers of the unique footwear leave atheist tracks as they walk. A new Kickstarter hopes to bring mobile shops to U.S. cities where they're invited to, with the tagline of bringing comfort and godlessness to the USA via a bus full of handmade shoes and a whole lot of love from friendly European atheists. The Kickstarter runs through July 16th.
I love these shoes. They're so cute. They're completely awesome. They're like really kind of trendy, sort of handmade leather, little sneaker shoes, Oxfords kinds of things. And the coolest thing about them, you've seen them, right? They've got the atheist stamped into the bottom. So instead of a tread, you are walking through dust and dirt. And instead of leaving little footprints with tread marks on them, you get atheist. So, Roger and Gree, have you seen these in Norway? I mean, it's a little bit closer in Germany than it is to the U.S.
No. But it suddenly occurred to me this would be a fantastic thing to have in snowshoes. So you could leave the same imprint in snow.
It's like the billboard version, right? I mean, it takes a little bit more surface area for snowshoes.
Sure. Yeah.
Hmm. Now, forgive us. We are not Norwegian. We do not know Norway, but you're not doing much to dispel the sort of understanding of Norway as just the above the Arctic Circle, everything snowy everywhere.
Polar bears on the streets, penguins underfoot. No, none of that.
Now, penguins, I know that because that's Southern Hemisphere.
South, yeah, that's correct.
That would be puffins, maybe?
Yes, up north.
They have them here.
Do the puffins wear some atheist shoes? I want puffins wearing atheist shoes. That would be awesome.
I'm looking at my wife.
Well, they do everything that penguins do and also fly, which is why they're my favorite bird.
If I remember right, they're up north and they're protected. They don't tell people where the puffins are because they don't want people to poach.
Secret puffin clubs.
Exactly.
Yeah. There is snowshoeing in Illinois as well.
There's snowshoeing in Washington also.
Yeah, so would you cut that out with the snowshoeing thing? I'm happy to say that their Kickstarter, I looked at it briefly before the show, is almost doubly funded at this point. So it looks like Atheist Shoes are coming to America.
Well, it's really cool because they're looking at rehabbing these retro buses. And, you know, I'm picturing like a V-dub, you know, travel wagon, sort of, you know, outfitted with all this, you know, atheist sort of stuff on the outside. I'm thinking of like in the 60s when you'd have the traveling blouse salesman that would come to like, you know, the little sort of like summer resorts and you could, you know, pick things out of the traveling bus. Except, I mean, this was something that, like, happened in America, like, in, you know, the 50s and 60s, that people would sell out of their buses, and we're looking at resurrecting that, but with atheist shoes? How wacky is that?
I imagine they'll probably clean up on the convention set, you know, going to, like, Skepticon and Aposticon and the Reason Rally, which was just recently. I imagine they'll do very well there. I, however, buy shoes once every 5 years. And so,
you're not alone.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I might be the market for it, but I'm glad that it's working out. I seem to recall a few years ago, like in the very early days of the show, us talking about this company, specifically about packaging or something like that. You're gonna have to help me out. My memory stinks.
Yeah, they did experience a little bit of trouble shipping to folks in the U.S. because generally it was this thing to celebrate that you would get your atheist shoes and you could proudly proclaim that your soles were atheist. Shoe soles, of course. But it came outfitted with packaging tape that said atheist shoes, right? Or Ich bin Atheist.
If I remember correctly, it said atheist on the cellophane tape that they used to wrap their packages on. I'm working off memory here, too.
So it was kind of an interesting story because they said, you know, hey, my shoes didn't arrive, or my shoes took 5 weeks to arrive when shipping is really supposed to take 3 weeks with DHL or, you know, whatever. So they did a little experiment saying, hey, why don't we, to our American customers, we'll just have plain brown parcel, you know, packages. And magically they started arriving, you know, within time and weren't lost anymore. We did have a few skeptics that got on that and said, well, to really have a, you know, a controlled study,
you'd have to send some. Now I remember this, and I was in fact one of those skeptics who said, yeah, send some packages with the tape and some packages without the tape and see how it goes in order to separate the idea that your packages are being hidden because of some political agenda or that your packages are being lost because the package service isn't very good.
Well, and you'd have to send the packages that say atheist on the tape and then packages that say something else like have a nice day on the tape just to make sure that it wasn't the tape versus lack of tape that was mucking up the delivery.
Well, I imagine if you don't tape the box at all, you're probably going to lose the contents. I'll add that.
Well done.
Okay.
Hopefully they won't lose out on this awesome rehabbed traveling bus Kickstarter.
I think it might be a poll the room time. Will you be buying a pair of Ichbin Atheist shoes?
You know, I haven't yet. They're kind of pricey, but my understanding is that they are quite good craftsmanship because they are handmade shoes. So I think it might be time for some spiffy blue Oxfords that say Ichbin Atheist.
Well, so far they've been nearer to you guys. Yeah. Any intentions of purchasing said shoes?
I probably would buy them if they had it in Norwegian or English, but having it in German doesn't seem quite right. I'm not Ich bin anything, so.
Right. I'm kind of in the same way. I mean, I might buy a pair just to put among my haul of interesting things, but would I often wear them? You know, I found the one pair of shoes that I just wear forever. And
these ones have laces, Sam. You might...
Oh, well then, no chance, because...
Velcro is the way to go.
Velcro. Yeah, I either do Velcro or slip-ons because I can barely manipulate physical objects at all. Ask an atheist with me. Anyway, moving on, let's talk about cake, perhaps.
Cake?
Would you like to talk about cake?
I'd love to talk about cake. There seems to be such drama with cake in the U.S. I don't know.
A supermarket chain apologized to an atheist group after one of their employees refused to make a cake for them. The ex-Muslims of North America ordered a cake featuring the group's name and logo from a Wegmans store to celebrate their third anniversary. An employee of the store's bakery told the group that the design was offensive and refused to make it. Members of the group and the Freedom From Religion Foundation contacted Wegmans corporate office to make a complaint. A company official at the highest level of management said it was a mistake to refuse the order and that the cake should have been made. Wegmans subsequently provided the cake for free. So, I mean, right out of the gate, it's kind of a happy ending because free cake, who's going to say no to free cake, right? I'm certainly not going to.
Right. But this sort of is oddly aligned with the cake drama that we've been experiencing in the U.S. for a little while since, you know, we had the rash of bakeries that would stand their ground to refuse to bake cakes for gay folks getting married. We had the LGBT-friendly pastor who faked having a cake refusal or faked cake graffiti.
Fake cake?
Fake cake graffiti. And then said, sorry, I was doing it for the attention or something like that, and I was in a very bad place.
The fake cake debate?
I guess.
Nah, it doesn't rhyme. Mm. Yeah, it doesn't work as well.
You know, it reminds me actually of about 3 years ago when we had an anniversary party of Ask an Atheist, and we got a congratulations Ask an Atheist sheet cake made. And I will admit, I was slightly nervous going through the checkout at the grocery store. I had no comment from anyone in front of me. There was a comment by the clerk saying, oh, what does that mean? And I said, Ask an Atheist is a radio show. We're in Tacoma. And she said, oh, I didn't know that there was an atheist radio show in Tacoma. And the person behind me said, hey, are you part of Tacoma Atheists? Because I've been to some of their brunches. And this was in the local Safeway grocery store. So that was my experience with buying an atheist cake. But I don't understand how an ex-Muslims of North America cake could be considered offensive. Is it that the cake baker is Muslim and says, I think that it's offensive that you are apostates? Were they confused by something? Were they just, you know, saying, oh, there's a symbol here that I don't understand? Now, Roger, we looked at this ex-Muslims of North America symbol.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's
two crescent moons smack back to back. So it looks almost like it's spelling Edom.
Okay.
Something like that. But I'm looking at the symbol. It has the, what are these called? These letters A to Z that we use.
The acronym?
There was nothing. I thought maybe it was something in Farsi or something. But no, they use regular letters, and it looks like a regular cake. And I can't imagine why they wouldn't want to make it.
So do you think that it's a misunderstanding that they see ex-Muslim and they think, oh, this is a group that's offensive to Muslims. Going to be super inclusive to everyone and say, no, we can't offend Muslims.
This could go any way. And the cake sensitivity fiasco that we're talking about here is it could be, oh, atheists don't deserve to have cake. Or it could be terrorists don't deserve to have cake because Muslims equal terrorists. We've heard that before. It also could be specifically a Muslim, an active Muslim making the cake saying, no, I'm not going to make cake for apostates. I don't know. I mean, the answer is none of that should matter. If you want cake, you should be able to receive cake. But that's the hill I'm making my stand on.
So, Gri and Roger, would this ever come up in Norway? Have you ever heard of? I mean, because we seem to have all of these, cake fiascos and cake debates here in the U.S. over all kinds of political and social issues.
We make our own cakes in Norway.
We bake our
own cakes, mostly.
So cake isn't quite the industry there as it is here. I think I can live with that.
It kind of does bring to mind maybe 4 or 5 years ago, a Walmart refused to bake a cake for a neo-Nazi family, a white separatist Nazi family that had named their children something terribly offensive and wanted swastikas put on the kid's birthday cake. And it was like, happy birthday, baby Hitler, or something like that. I can't exactly remember what the child's name was, but it was something. It really was. It was, I believe the child's name had Hitler in it,
You're out on your own in this one. I don't remember this at all.
This really happened. Okay. And the Walmart was deemed to be, fine to have refused to bake this cake. So is that the kind of thing that would be deemed extreme in Norway, to not put happy birthday Hitler and swastikas on a cake, maybe?
My guess would it would be
no,
very poor taste.
Yeah,
very poor taste.
I believe
we want our cakes to taste good.
I believe we have discovered the cake bounding box. What is Wegmans anyway? I've never heard of it.
A grocery store chain.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
That's less interesting. Yeah, I just I don't I thought the whole point of a job is that you had to do stuff you didn't like. It seems like a weird place to make your stand.
Here's Sam following his dream.
Like people pay me or something for it. What do you mean?
No, I'm hoping that soon enough in America we'll feel secure enough in our own ideals that we can feel okay with someone else eating their own cake.
I do note that it's usually people, but today it's America because we've got people from another country here. I just thought I'd point that out. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're actually going to talk about those nationalistic-y differences, I guess.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Allegedly, soccer is a beautiful game.
It is when you know what's going on.
That's the problem. MLS is 20 years old, and people are still shocked to hear that there's an American Soccer League.
That's why you and I are talking about it. This is a discussion of American soccer for nerds and beginners. It's a good first step if a crippling soccer addiction is something that's missing from your life.
Join the club. Celebrate the 20th anniversary of MLS by actually following the season.
Hands-free football. New episodes every week at handsfreefootball.com. I want to bring it back, but it's more than basic.
Thank you. Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Before I went into the break, I said I wasn't getting paid for this, and I thought maybe I should put the lie to that. I would like to thank Sean from Tacoma, Erica from Seattle, the Ray family from Granite Falls, Clint from the Internet, Peggy from Kent, and Paul from Mount Rainier, the actual mountain, for meeting Peggy from Kent's challenge, which is the challenge to the listeners of Ask an Atheist to help us keep the lights on. Every dollar you give us goes directly toward show production. You can go to askanatheist.tv, click on the yellow button on the right-hand side, takes you directly to our PayPal page. And so, now, well, yes?
Yeah, Sam, we've got guests in the studio.
Indeed we do.
I think we should properly introduce them. Roger, you're an IT professional. Grew up all over the States in a military family.
That's
and
correct.
You and your wife, Gree, have raised three teens in the largely secular nation of Norway, where, Gree, you are from, and where, Roger, you have lived for more than two decades now.
Yes, thank you. Hello.
So how did you find yourself in Norway?
Oh, boy. I was enlisted in the Air Force from 91 to 95, and my last 2 years were spent in England, where I was stationed at. And while I was there, someone convinced me to take a vacation to Norway, something I'd never considered before. And having been a military brat, we lived in Germany back in the late 70s, and I fell in love with that country and the culture and the fact that it's just there's so many old things there. And then when I decided to take a vacation to Norway, I discovered that it was a country that was just as beautiful with friendlier people and lots of culture. And so in 95, I went ahead and took a vacation on my own, having researched universities throughout Norway on my Amiga 1200 with early
nice.
Days of internet. Yes, yes. And that was, I found out the universities of Bergen, Oslo, Trondheim, and Tromsø had programs where you could spend a year learning their language and then continue on studying as a regular university student. I thought, this is perfect. Went to Bergen, met up with some Norwegian friends. They showed me around. I thought it was a nice little city. They said, skip Oslo. It's too big, too impersonal. So I went ahead and did that and went into Trondheim. And went into what was had just become NTNU, Norwegian University of Science and Technology, into the international office there, and met a lady where I had some questions, and apparently I'd spoken to earlier from England, and that lady turned out later to become my wife and the mother of our three teenage children now, and I can't go back to the States now. I'm trapped.
You're trapped in Norway now.
I'm trapped in Norway.
No, you told us that you were a lifelong atheist, but you had also said that you were actually raised in a religious family and somehow ended up at a Baptist college.
Oh, boy. Yeah, actually, lifelong atheist. I would say lifelong atheist in the sense that I was in my 20s when I came to see the light. And before that, I had actually had made plans on becoming a youth minister. Oh, boy. Oh, this is a come-clean moment now. And so basically, I had gone to what was then California Baptist College in the hopes of becoming a youth minister, majoring in both theology as well as English literature. And basically, being exposed to learning the truths of how the New Testament came to be, as well as the Old Testament, learning a little bit of Hebrew, ancient Hebrew, and reading the texts and whatnot, and seeing how my future co-workers behaved and believed, I realized that this was hooey. I just could not do it anymore, so I dropped the whole thing. And then through the years following that, I basically, being pushed by my father, who is a very conservative Christian man, I basically had to come clean to him and say that I am an atheist, and actually use the A word. Atheist, because I had to just put an end to it, because he would push me to go to church. Why aren't you going to church? Because I don't believe in your God. And that had to be it. So I had to cut it clean. And so a few years ago, on my last visit to here in Washington or so, I actually slipped and told one of my aunts that I was an atheist. And now the whole family knows. So I am the black sheep.
Uh-huh. Is that not working out too well then?
Oh, that's great. They're fun and fine people. It's just that apparently I'm going to burn in hell.
Oh.
There's that.
So they'll still talk to you, but just with that added edge?
Sure. You know, and of course the occasional birthday and Christmas card that says, gosh, we love you, son, but it's a shame that you're going to burn. We're going to miss you.
Wow.
No, I don't mean this bad. I don't mean to bring the room down here. Come on. This is a... I've come to terms with it. I'm quite okay with this.
So being in kind of the Norway, where most people are secular or sort of loosely affiliated with religious sort of ideas, Gry, how did you sort of interface with that? Have you experienced any of the similar kinds of things?
That he has with his family?
Yes.
Well, no, not really. It's the kind of thing we see in movies from the States, actually. Now, I have no experience with, heavy religious views. I grew up in a family where, I'm baptized. My parents were married in church. And we are confirmated when we're 15. I didn't do that, not because I didn't believe in God, but because I thought it was just a ploy to get money, which it is. So when we met, he had not said anything about being an atheist. He had told me he was planning to become a youth minister, but that he had fallen out of it. But he hadn't said that he was an atheist. And I had not myself said that I was either. It's not necessary in Norway. We're not pushed to go to church anyway. I mean, you go to church when somebody's getting christened, somebody's getting married, or when somebody dies. So it's like, it's not very often you've been confronted with whether or not you're religious. And those are not really religious events for most people.
That's one of the things I have to say when talking about culture in the United States, is that while this may not be a Christian nation, we definitely live in a Christian social substrate where just sort of the going idea is that unless you say otherwise, you're probably connected to some Christian organization or you go to some sort of church. Well, or you theoretically go to some sort of church. I mean, to be honest, there's a lot of people who say they're religious but probably haven't been inside of a church. I've probably been inside of a church more recently than they have. So, I mean, I know it's Europe, so also sort of a Christian substrate, but it seems to have evolved farther away from that, where, you know, saying you're an atheist here is still kind of a weird thing that you have to explain, where it doesn't seem to be that way in Norway.
No.
And nobody asks you what your religious
views
are.
So it's not even a question.
That's a known, you don't go around asking people what they believe in.
It's rude.
I don't know what my colleagues, whether they are atheists or if they are Christians or what they are. I have no idea, and it's really not important. Nobody asks you which church you go to unless you're going to a christening and I want to know which one it is.
Right.
But it's not something that you... It's not interesting. It has nothing to do with who you are and what you are. So you just don't, it's not something that's important.
I think, Sam, you touched on this as well, is one of the first questions you ask when you come into a strange town, especially in the South, one of the first questions someone asks you is, which church do you go to?
Right.
And you don't get that in Norway because it's actually considered quite rude to ask anyone what their belief is. I believe we have the big boss at our university is a believer of some sort, but we have no idea what kind of believer. Mm-hmm. It's not an issue. It's a non-issue.
Right. It was almost that way for a while, like growing up in Illinois, I was told, you don't talk about religion, you don't talk about somebody's politics.
Right.
Unless you're specifically in a religious context or a political context. Because it's considered quite rude, it's leave those things to the person. But I hate to say, the last couple times I've been back to Illinois, that's not really the case anymore. There's been sort of as the religious nature of the United States has changed, there's now a fight where there wasn't before. Hmm. And now it's no longer considered rude. It's part of what you do.
So in terms of fight where there wasn't one before, several months ago, we had actually commented on the decline in enrollment in the Church of Norway, including Norwegians' ability to opt out of certain church taxes or church registration. Mm-hmm. And we got a nice letter of correction from a listener, Odd. I believe that's how you say that name.
Odd.
So it looks like the English word odd.
That's what we're here for.
Okay. But it's a very interesting Old Norse name, I came to understand. But he clarified that Norway ceased to have a state religion in 2012. So can you tell us about sort of how that ends up playing out in public life with the Church of Norway?
That we had a state church?
Yes. I mean,
that's exactly how it is now.
And officially, it broke with the state in 2012, but is there some sort of preferential treatment towards members of the church in terms of taxes or registration or anything like that?
No, all religious communities in Norway can get support from the government.
But they have to provide membership numbers.
Yeah. They have to say how many members they have. And based on that, you get support from the government. So that's...
That would also include the humanists as well.
Yeah.
They also have the same commitment.
Ah, so in terms of sort of like in the U.S., how you can have a nonprofit group or a church that is tax exempt, similar kinds of things where you can get tax exemptions or direct support from the government. But humanist groups can also apply for that same kind of treatment.
I have recently considered that I should be a member of the humanists, and looking on their web pages, they encourage people to become members, of course, but part of their requirement is that you notify the state that you are no longer a member of the Norwegian church, of the state church, what was the state church, and that way they can assure that they get the credit for having you as a member, mm-hmm. and therefore some financial, it's not a large amount of money, but it's some. Why would you say no to the free money?
Right.
Why not? Yeah.
So you had referred to confirmation and baptisms or christenings and weddings. Are there secular alternatives in Norway for those kinds of life events?
Absolutely. We have our daughter with us today who has been confirmed in the humanists mm-hmm. of Norway. She had her confirmation with them, and my oldest is here, and she was not confirmed at all, much like her mother. So I have heard of some families where there is pressure to go ahead and get confirmed within the church because that is tradition. That's what you do.
But it's more of a traditional thing than
not a religious thing, as okay. in you're going to burn if you don't do this.
Right.
Right.
Okay. So one of the interesting things that we were talking about in the pre-show, which caught my ear, is the conversation about sort of a continuing conversation here in the United States about 12-step programs and Alcoholics Anonymous and stuff like that. And Gree, you had a very interesting perspective on that because you don't apparently don't have anything like that in Norway.
No, we don't have those religious 12-step programs. Those are only in American movies, as far as we're concerned. Of course, there are programs of people who are addicts, but mm-hmm. they are not religiously based. You can, of course, choose to go to one that is, but the government will not. Put that up as the option that you're supposed to go to.
You know, in a place here where the 12-step model, the Alcoholics Anonymous model, and the NA and the GA and all of those sort of spin-offs are so pervasive, it really struck me that those things would not exist in any noticeable form outside the U.S. And it got me thinking, you know, Sam, you are a scholar, if you will, of historical sort of social movements and the development of some of those kinds of things. Right around what time was AA sort of incorporated and formed?
If I remember right, and I can pull this up a little later, Bill W. and company really got started right at the turn of the 20th century, I think around 1910. And it was before, you know, psychoanalysis and other forms of psychology had really taken root in the United States, and most social programs were done through the church because the state governments or the federal government really just didn't have much in the way of personal aid. And so when the government started taking a more forwardly social approach to helping people out through addictions or just social programs at all,
then that AA model still just really stuck.
Right. They just sort of inherited what had already existed and built upon that. And there's a lot of people who will tell you that Alcoholics Anonymous is not a specifically religious organization because they do not require that you be a member of a church. However, I think it's like step two or step three that says you have to basically have to suborn your will to some higher power. And
well, if that's not religious, I don't know what it is.
Right.
It's certainly not humanistic. It's certainly not naturalistic.
And I do know some people who've gone through the AA program who specifically tried for something humanistic or something at least non-spiritual as a higher power to sort of cope with so they can get through this 12-step program yet maintain their own identity. And they were just outright told that wasn't powerful enough. That's not a big enough entity for you. So it may not be. It's the falsity of ecumenicalism. It's the concept of ecumenicalism is it's okay as long as you all believe in something. And that usually leaves us, you know, atheists and humanists out in the wind because no, we don't play that part either. And that leaves, you know, the sort of the problems that you have with Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous and the attendant other programs that go with it.
So what are the programs that are then available to people? Are you familiar with how the sort of government or healthcare system takes an approach with people that are struggling with addiction and other kinds of issues like that?
Usually it would be through your GP that you would go, that they would refer you to a specialist or to a treatment center of some kind, and that they would take it from there, usually with therapists and psychologists and that kind of intervention. The AA is just, it's not scientifically based, so I just cannot see how Norwegian authorities would ever approve of that as a way of treating alcoholism, for instance. But that sounds strange to me.
It kind of is, and I think one of the things people need to, what needs to be spoken about, which often isn't, is just the efficacy of these programs. And Alcoholics Anonymous has somewhere in the 2 or 3%, where more standard practices have something in the 10 or 20%.
Yeah.
And that's, that doesn't sound great, but given that we are talking about addictions and how addictions can affect people, that's a night and day change between the two.
So you...
Sorry, 1935, not 1910. I was 15 years off.
Oh. 15 years off. So yeah. Somewhere around the Depression era.
Yeah.
Yep. So you had mentioned that it's just kind of rude to talk about someone else's or inquire about someone else's religion in Norway. But to what extent does religious conversation sort of interplay with the general social or political discourse in Norway? Wow. Is it talked about in the news? Is there any sort of reporting that goes on?
Sure. Yeah. You have discussions. We've had a lot of discussions with regard to whether gays should be allowed to be married in church. You know, if you should have a specific liturgy, I think it's called, and for gay couples.
Right.
So
those kind of discussions we have.
Not the question about whether gay people should be able to get married, but whether they should be able to get married in a church.
In the Norwegian church, I'm thinking you're...
Yeah, if you want to get married in church, some priests are against that. But yeah, you can get married. It's just,
I think Norway was a little further along than the U.S. in accepting gay folks being able to get married.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. A lot of countries have, actually.
Actually, it's just a funny little tidbit, but they have a gay pride parade in Oslo yesterday, and the leader of the religious party participated in the gay pride march.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And they did that as a direct consequence of what happened in Orlando. Right. To show support for gay people.
Yeah, because, we have the Pride Parade here in Seattle was this week. And while it's a major corporate event and there's a lot of local politicians involved, and you will find religious organizations involved, it is, as for all intensive purposes, normalized. But you will find, you're not going to find like somebody from CPAC there. You're not going to find somebody from a conservative Christian group showing up. And that is one difference that I've noticed between the United States and a lot of other places.
So I want to kind of hone in on this. You said as a support for the shootings that had happened in Orlando. Mm-hmm. So that definitely struck a chord with everyone in the States. But you're saying that it really resonated outside of the United States, too?
Sure. I think our city hall even flew the rainbow flag in support downtown Trondheim.
Yeah, and the Prime Minister actually opened the Gay Pride Parade in Oslo. So it's
it was a tragedy that even echoed over in Norway.
So that's really kind of interesting to see how much the politics of those kinds of things, can echo around the world. Are there any geographic areas in Norway that seem to be more religious than others? You're talking about Trondheim as not religious, but everywhere seems to have some Bible Belt.
Yes, we have a Bible Belt. I'm sorry.
Tiny one.
Very tiny. We're trying to make it smaller. Yes. It's about, southwest, I believe?
Yep.
Southwest region of Norway.
And what sort of characterizes it? What makes it sort of that way socially?
Well, you know some people who came from that region.
Yeah, they fled the region, I should say.
Refugees.
No, but yeah, they have a lot of these little, there's like little, not churches, but little places to pray, like all over in the little villages. And it's very tight-knit and very, very strict requirements to how you should behave as women and men, and yeah, in general, very strict religion. I don't know too much about it. I have to say it's not the kind of crowd I get in.
Almost sounds like Footloose. I'm sorry.
So I've only spoken to the ones that have actually gotten out of it. I haven't.
Yeah, that's been my experience. Is I hear about the American Southeast from people who escape it too. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-Skeptic, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to break, and when we come back, we'll continue this conversation and also talk about some good, some bad current events. You know, the usual.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the third Thursday meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to askanatheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist with me, Sam Aldi, 844-Skeptic, 844-753-7842. We're talking about differences between the U.S. and Norway with Gree and Roger, and in the break, you know, seeing what we missed, and what, the question of education came up, so...
Yeah, right up my alley. So, usually in the U.S., we have some kind of, you know, world history classes that sometimes bring up religion in a historical context, or religion in terms of, you know, let's take a little, you know, survey of what each major religion believes. What kind of things exist like that in Norway for public school children?
Well, they start having religious studies in primary school from the first grade onwards, and it's not just Christianity, it's all the major world religions that they are supposed to learn about, because it's believed that it's important in order to create tolerance and awareness that you should know about the big religions in the world.
So it's not a sort of Christian education in terms of let's do catechism or let's do prayer in chapel or things like that. It's a general sort of social studies.
Yes, that's right.
So do you think that that has an effect then on Norway's adult population of sort of understanding and then not asking about it as adults? Maybe that's why it's not interesting?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know if we go into in enough depth in those classes to actually know if it has an impact. But it certainly makes you aware of the existence of other religions, and that, and you know, especially because Norway doesn't have a very long history of immigration, so a lot of the people that are coming into Norway are first generation, or you know, maybe second. So it's a way of actually getting to know the people that are coming in as well.
I did want to ask about that, because right now in the U.S., our political discourse is centered around whether to accept refugee populations and immigrant people from Muslim countries. Hmm. It's kind of a very hot topic politically, and there's a lot of, you know, hot-headed talk. What's that look like in Norway right now? Because we know that a lot of European countries are taking the brunt of Syrian refugees.
That's, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Actually, that's a huge discussion in Norway. It is, it's caused a lot of, I don't know how to put it, but it's put a lot of strain on the system in Norway, because it is a small country and we are not really equipped to handle the sheer number of refugees that are coming in. And it builds under the paranoia that certain politicians want to create about immigrants. is that, okay, now the people are coming in from IS and, you know, we're going to have a lot of terrorists in Norway. You know, it kind of feeds into that frenzy. And it's not that easy to fight it. Because it is, it is scary when you see people are coming over the border and there's like 10,000 and 15,000 people coming in one night. How do you deal with that? How do you have enough room for people? How do you, the organization that you need to have around it is
so underneath all the arguments about all the cultural arguments that people on the right are generally going to make, there are actual concerns about logistics and finding places to put people.
Yep.
Yeah, that's not unlike other arguments that we've heard lately. But
I think
and,
so.
Yeah. And they do strange things, you know, because you couldn't from Russia, you could not come across with a car, but you can bike across. So suddenly you had a whole bunch of people that last stretch from Russia to Norway, they would bike.
Yeah,
in the middle of winter.
We have a border with Russia, just in case.
Yeah, so yeah,
up way up north.
So you know, because you're not allowed to walk across it or bike or drive across it, but you could bike across the border.
Right.
So there was a whole little industry on the other side of the border to give people bikes so they could bike across the border to Norway in the middle of winter.
And then, they would dump the bike on the other side of the border. Yeah. They're good to go. They're in Norway.
Probably somebody would then collect the bike and then bring it over.
I believe so.
Yeah, and there are new routes coming up every day. You know, if there's too many people, you know, too many people guarding one part of the border, then there's, you know, and it's horrible because there's so many people dying on the way. And we don't see enough of that part of it. It's just, and how do we handle it?
Right.
Because it is a huge crisis. Too much for one country or, you know, for a lot of countries to handle, actually.
So it is quite fascinating, and it seems like it's more influencing the discussion from a logistical and social perspective rather than something about religion. Do you think that it will change the sort of topic of religion, since most of the migrants are from a non-Christian and non-atheistic setting? Do you think that that changes the consideration of religion in Norway? Or is that something you see in the future?
I don't think we have the same thing. We don't have the rhetoric that says that Norway is God's country. We don't have the hand of God protecting Norway. And if we turn away from Christianity, then we will lose that hand. We don't have that kind of rhetoric over there. So I don't think we have...
I think that the biggest... Well, there is issues with the... You know, people are afraid of the Muslims because they think that they are going to...
Sharia laws. What you're
thinking. They want, you know, that they want Sharia laws.
Mm. Right.
That's, I think that's the biggest fear. I mean, Norwegians are not particularly religious, mostly, but the idea of having somebody come in and, you know, put down laws that would limit our society as it is today, that I think is what is the most terrifying to most people. And that is what these politicians they're playing on.
Right.
You know, that fear that, oh, you know, now I, you know, I can't go out as a woman and do this and this, or, you know, I can't have that job, or I have to wear a veil, or, you know, those kind of limitations. Those are the things that people are the most scared of, I think.
Well, some kinds of politics stay the same no matter where you are, I guess. Mm-hmm. Where there's a lot more of that going on in the U.S. right now than even I'm used to. And that's not to say that we've ever lacked for it, but... It does seem to be hitting a fevered pitch in the last couple of years.
That's also a big topic in Norway as well, is the American politics. We're watching.
Yeah. So what? All right. What's been the approach for that in Norway for this year's election cycle?
In terms of what we're... I think most people are afraid of the idea of... I know this is not a political show, but the word President Trump seems to scare most Norwegians.
Yeah. And I've made it pretty clear that that's pretty safe territory for the show. I actually think there isn't a... I think there's a reason to talk about it on a show like this one, specifically.
Sure. And the rhetoric that Gry was talking about is a lot what we're seeing, that same being flown at just thrown out there into the ether and people absorbing it and not checking it.
Right.
And I know that a lot of people that I work with, we joke and laugh and ha-ha. You know, when we first saw Trump on the field, we all thought it was a big joke, just as I believe people in America thought that this guy's never going to get the GOP candidacy, and he got it.
Right.
And now we are quite scared of what it'll be like.
I think most Norwegians are just shaking their heads in disbelief and can't believe that's actually a possibility.
There's a lot of people doing that here, too. And Yeah, I mean, because this is not the first time that Trump has run for president. This is his third or fourth attempt. And in the first two tries, he just kind of, he actually kind of disappeared the minute it became clear he would have to let his financial status be known. And then, so the theory was he didn't want to let people know how rich he wasn't. Right. So he was going to stay out, and maybe he's just doing better this year. So he carried it through, and then you have, you got a GOP field the size of a football team. And that's what we're stuck with. And there's a lot of people on like literally throughout the entire political spectrum who are concerned about what this kind of iconoclasm can lead to, which is why I think it's safe. It's safe material for a show like this one.
Well, I think it's quite the one admirable thing I think of Mr. Trump is that he has not been told by God to run for president. I think it makes him the only one, I believe. I'm not quite sure.
It was a very strange thing to see that I think the unfolding of secularism in the U.S. has resulted in two front-running candidates that don't really talk about God an awful lot like they did in 2012 or they did in mid-year elections.
Well, let's be honest. The religion front and center thing, while it's considered part of the American thing, it was never a topic that would make or break elections. Until Jimmy Carter was like really the first president who made a big deal about his religious affiliations, and then Reagan sort of carried the ball on that one into the moral majority era, and so maybe we're returning to the days where everybody just assumes you're Christian, which would be two steps forward, one and a half steps back, I guess.
Well, we saw what the discussion was with Senator Sanders, where he is ethnically Jewish, but espouses really rather humanistic ideals. And most people sort of consider him, behind the scenes to be basically a secular Jew. So there are some assumptions that can never be undermined.
Right. Well, one of the things we were talking about in the break that I don't think that I'm honestly a little bit curious about is the idea of a Christian class in Norwegian schools. Now, if I were to hear about that in the U.S., I would be immediately alarmed. But the context is different, so that can make the data different. I don't know precisely how to ask this question, but they apparently teaching about Christianity in public schools was something that was the thing to do for a while in Norway.
So why don't we actually hear from Victoria, your oldest right now. Victoria, you are just going into your final year of high school. Is that correct?
Yes. I'm currently going to a high school that is the oldest school in all of Norway. It's the first school. It came in 1150, I believe.
Wow.
Wow.
And it was based off of the church that is right next to it. So I am right next to the biggest church that we have, and it's really beautiful. But we focus a lot on religion and mainly Latin.
Oh wow, okay.
Which I'm also taking. But they used to have students up in the church, and they had them in the building ever since 1150, and they focused a bit on religion, quite a bit, but it was mainly Christianity.
Okay, so they focused a lot on Christianity. Was the focus on how to be a Christian, or was it just like Christian history, or?
It was a lot of Christian history, a lot of not really how to be a Christian, but generally the beliefs. And I think majority of the texts that they translated in like Latin, for instance, were religious texts. They were Christian texts. So they would learn a lot through translation.
In Latin, those are mostly what you're going to get, I guess, are religious texts.
Yeah.
But
some of them are from Roman beliefs. But
right.
So then by the time that you came around to being a high schooler, how had that schooling and that those classes changed then?
We have absolutely no focus on Christianity in the first 2 years. The last year we have focus on, religion, on any religion, on a lot of religions. It's pretty much everything, but we don't have a lot of focus on Christianity, not really. It's just trying to understand all these different religions, their beliefs, and trying to find a way to respect them, and also learning about them through history so that we can understand how history has evolved through religion.
I like the idea behind it. And, it really varies from school district to school district and state to state in the United States, how that ends up getting taught. Oftentimes it's, sort of one unit in one semester of 1 year of high school. Do you feel that you've benefited from being able to learn about all the different religions from primary school all the way up through your high school experience?
Yeah, it's been really different because I don't sit there and wonder when other people talk about the religion, if they're, you know, Muslim, I know, oh, okay, I know parts of your religion, I'll know not to do this and this and this, so I know what I shouldn't say or shouldn't do, and makes it easier to talk to people and, you know, be more understanding and find other things they have in common besides religion.
I think that's fantastic. Man, maybe I'll apply to be a study abroad teacher for a year. I wouldn't mind teaching in a building or next to a building that's been around for about a millennium.
Yeah, a little intimidating, a little bit.
Yes, just a little bit, since my school was built in 1967, sometime around there.
Well, thank you very much. That was we were talking about that in the break, and I found that very interesting, and as it turns out, it's more interesting than even I thought.
Yes, thank you, Victoria.
It sounds very Star Trek. I'm sorry. But it is very...
Very Star Trek to learn about...
Yeah, you know, Star Trek is the ideal society where everyone's accepting and whatnot, and that seems to be what we're shooting for here in Norway.
Well, yeah. I mean, what I'm getting is that the political problems, you know, that you guys are facing look like the political problems we're talking about here.
Certainly.
But with a slightly nicer or slightly less religious approach, which I consider definitely a better option.
And perhaps a more informed approach.
But hey, I'm not going to lie. Would I be doing a show like this if I was in Norway? I don't know. I doubt it.
It would be rude. It would be rude, Sam.
Yeah.
Don't say you're an atheist. Don't ask about anyone else.
Don't ask an atheist.
Oh, boy. So let's do... Some news here, some current events. Dozens of individuals were treated for burns to their feet and lower extremities after they walked on the burning coals at a motivational seminar held in Dallas at the end of June. The website for Tony Robbins' Unleash the Power Within seminar encourages attendees to storm across a bed of hot coals, claiming that overcoming unconscious fears can help individuals conquer the other fires of their lives with ease. 5 people were brought to a local hospital for treatment, and 30 to 40 others were treated at the scene. Nearly 7,000 other conference goers who paid at least $650 to attend the event completed the walk without injury, presumably because brief contact between wood embers and the soles of feet does not normally result in a burn.
I love this story. I mean, I don't really love this story.
Did you write the brief on this one?
I did.
I can tell you love this story.
So, okay, you pay $650 to go to your self-actualizing seminar where you get to do something that is physically possible, right? I mean, if you dip your feet in cold water and then you walk briskly across some, you know, low embers that are covered in ash, you're not going to burn yourself. There's nothing magical about it.
Yeah.
There's nothing magical about it. And by saying...
Well, I mean...
You burned your feet because you didn't believe in conquering your fears.
Well, this is one of those self-actualizing things that seem to backfire in a big way. Walk across the coals. Be powerful. Conquer everything. Ow, 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 ow. Burn, 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 burn. Oh, apparently I can conquer nothing. It's like, really? That's maybe a little bit more... This is just poorly executed. This isn't bad spirituality. It's bad engineering.
Well, it's bad engineering for the 5 out of 7,000 that ended up burning their thing. You know, there were reports, actually, that the ones that experienced the burns, you know why? They were standing a little bit too long on the specific coals as opposed to walking briskly.
Tell me.
Selfies.
Oh, well, everybody knows selfies remove spiritual power.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, you take a picture, capture your soul. We've been told this for centuries.
So, are there any of these self-help seminars, these little things that come to Norway?
You know, I actually have a friend on Facebook who lives in Trondheim who posts a lot of free seminars for self-actualization and whatnot, and I have never been tempted to accept the invitation and actually show up. I have a feeling only a handful ever do show up. We're just not that kind of people. My wife is giving me a really strange look.
She's baffled by it all?
We're all baffled by it. But yeah, these self-help books, the Tony Robbins and whatnot. Yeah.
Not Tim Robbins, the guy from the Shawshank Redemption. I made that. I was like, wait, really? He's doing self-help? No,
you mean
sorry,
Tony Robbins, the tall guy.
Yeah, okay, yes. Right.
Yeah. No, I was just looking, I was hearing the story thinking $650, I wouldn't mind that. Pay me.
Yeah.
Times 7,000.
Exactly.
I mean...
I'll help you walk across.
Is this one of those... Like, I don't know this guy too well. Is he one of those guys who actually says... Does he make it about, like, spiritual power.
Your mind can conquer the unconquerable.
I mean, are we talking The Secret? Because if it's The Secret, just say it's The Secret.
It's a little secrety, yeah.
It's pre-secret, I believe, but yes, okay. You're right on track, yes.
Okay.
It's that we're going to discount physics of hot things and conduction, you know, basic heat conduction, and say that you will be able to walk across hot coals because your mind can conquer things. No, you can walk across hot coals because dying embers covered in ashes does not conduct to human calloused feet.
Because I can kind of see the psychological psyching out thing where it's like, look, you can walk across a bed of hot coals. You can do anything. Just sort of a psychological psych out, much like the coach saying, go out there and give 110% to a football team. What does it mean? Nothing. But it might have a psychological jazz to it. It might.
Oh, I can tell you the first time I broke a board with my hand, that was really fun. That actually is empowering. But I was not under the illusion that my mind suddenly made me Superman Hulk strong, right? I mean,
no.
I understood that when you concentrate, you know, a quick burst of energy at a board, it's going to break.
Yeah, I've dropped a soldering iron in my hand a few times. I don't think I became more powerful that way. This is Ask an Atheist. Our phone number is 844-753-7844. You can email us at questions at askanatheist.tv, Twitter us at askanatheistwa. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Greet.
Thank you.
Thank you, Becky.
Thank you, Sam.
I had a great evening.
Thank you, Victoria.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Victoria. That was fantastic. Yes, this was a lot of fun, and it's nice to be back behind the microphone. See you guys next week.